Hello, welcome to the final instalment of our coverage from the 2024 24 Hours of Le Mans. Hello, welcome back. I'm Gareth, sitting alongside Phil Williams and Raph Burks. We lost Chris last night. Chris was up till what time, Phil?
I don't know, 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Was he watching the race or was he drinking?
He found two buddies at the bar and he was heavily drinking and telling them about all about Chris.
All about what?
All about Chris. Well, the two guys had beat-up campers, didn't they?
So, oh, they'd be very happy to talk about that.
I had to walk away in the end.
Right. That's a whole conversation for another episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. Chris's VW camper, which is one of the most beautiful VW campers I've ever seen. It looks like a Volkswagen Golf GTI. But that's for another show. Right now, we are... Well, it's 7 minutes past 12, so what we got, 3 hours and 53 minutes left of the world's greatest motor race. Currently leading is Alex Palou in the Cadillac, the number two Cadillac. Kamui Kobayashi, I've noticed how I have to repronounce his name now. It's not Kamui, it's Kamui, apparently. Kamui Kobayashi in the number seven Toyota, running second, just 6 seconds behind the Cadillac. Toyota at number three as well, another 8 seconds behind. The first of the three Ferraris, the F Cox Ferrari, my Ferrari, the number 51, is running fourth at the moment at only 18 seconds behind the leader. So there's still hope that I could get the win in my car. Although if Cadillac win, Phil's going to be happy, and that'll make me happy. Now, I have to admit, I was up fairly late last night drinking and lost track of what was going on, particularly in GT3 and LMP2. So let's just have a look. The leader in LMP2 at the moment is the Inter-Europol car, running in 17th overall. And in GT3, it's the German team Mante Porsche, number 29, with Team WRT just... Oh, it just refreshed. 1 minute, 21 seconds behind the leaders. Man, this is an amazing race. And there's still a few hours to run, so I'll keep you posted. Oh, I'm very sad to realise when I got to the pit lane that the AF Course Ferrari, and it's confusing because they're all AF Course Ferraris, but the, if you like, the independent, the privateer Ferrari seems to be garaged with billows of smoke coming from underneath the bonnet. I hope that they get that fixed and get it running again. So I love Ferrari and I love this race and I don't want anyone to go out. I want as many runners to be running at the end of the race. Well,
I got
that
a wave.
Yeah, you got away from the police helicopter. That is something I've never seen before. The Gendarme Escurial helicopter flying directly over the circuit. Just went down the start-finish straight at the height of the stands. And they wave at that. What's all that about? We've got almost exactly 2 hours to go to the end of the race and it's chucking it down at Mulsanne. Perfectly dry here in the grandstand, if not a little cold, and that's been the noticeable thing about Le Mans this year, how unbelievably cold it's been. Often when you come to Le Mans you get burnt. Occasionally you get a bit chilled at night, but to be frozen in the day in June. Did you hear that? Did you hear that pew sound? That was one of the hypercars, can't see which one, leaving the pit. Which one was it?
It was the LMP2, it was the United.
Oh, LMP2, making that noise. Curious. Never heard that before. It's been interesting sitting here at the pits, watching the hypercars leave the pits, because they leave under electric power and then the motors kick in, so you get this whistle and then pop, bang, off they go. Let's see if I can catch a moment where one of the hypercars pits, although they've all really just pitted a moment ago. It's not likely to happen for a while. Would it be worth hearing that sound again?
It's great, they go about 30, 40 yards, just silent, and then suddenly just boom. Boom. It's like they wake up and...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got a race, that sort of thing. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I turned my engine on.
It's a different note that they all kick off on as well. It's like, sitting here, I suppose, we can really hear it.
It's 15 degrees here. I don't think it's ever been much higher than that over the whole weekend. There are occasional moments where the sun shined. Oh, there's a spinner. A car has... It's the Toyota. Brendan Hartley in the Toyota has spun down at Mulsanne. Struggling to try and get it back going again. He's got his tail 90 degrees to the circuit. He's going again. Oh, and he's into the gravel on the other side. Can he get out? If any car can, that one can, because it's essentially four-wheel drive. He's going again.
What if his face,
he looked devastated. Oh. He was passing the... Oh, Pergidi. Pergidi tipped him into a spin. I'm watching the replay on the screen. It's great being here in the grandstand. You know, we can see into the pits. We can see the cars as they head up towards the Dunlop Bridge. We can see them as they leave the Ford chicane and the pit entrance. And we've got two screens we can see, one at either end of the start-finish straight. So if you come to Le Mans and you've never been before, take my advice, buy a grandstand ticket. They're about £150. And it'll be the best £150 you've ever spent on motorsport. Do you know, I've been... What have you seen, Raf? Oh, Buemi looking sad.
Oh my God, it looks like he's going to cry. He put in... a really good stint before, and they switched over, I think, a couple of pit stops ago, and he'd done a really long run, apparently. Made up a lot of time, and he's just seen it all just disappear.
That's how difficult Le Mans is. One tiny mistake in the last couple of hours, and you can go from hero to zero.
Everything's bunched up as well. It's
great. Yeah, yeah. They're all right on top of each other. I realised about 10 minutes ago, 22 hours into the race, that the TF Sport, number 82 and 81 TF Sport cars, are Corvettes. I didn't recognise them, because for me, a Corvette, of course, is a front-engined brute. Not anymore. A couple of years ago, 3 years ago now, they became mid-engine cars. I've never seen them running at Le Mans. So I just assumed it was a Ferrari or a McLaren. I wasn't really paying attention to that team. But it's a Corvette. And on another note, I was wondering if the Cadillac had the same engine as the Corvette, but apparently not. It's a bespoke engine designed in Pontiac, Michigan, for this race, and it's the only naturally aspirated engine in hypercar, which is why it makes that big, old, bellowy, barking, grumbly noise. The Cadillac definitely wins the best noise of the weekend.
I was hoping that one might just come past as I said that. Instead, we, and the Ferraris are quieter. The 296, they're much quieter this year. I remember the Ferraris used to sing in the days of Fizzy Keller when he drove for AF Corse. They used to sing like sopranos. Not anymore. They rumble like a big old-fashioned V8. And it's, they're not a V8, are they? They're a V6, aren't they? There's always a no-hoper running at Le Mans. It used to be the J-Lock Lamborghini, the Japanese Lamborghini Owners Club, who decided to have a go at running here. Then, for the last few years, it was the Bicolis debacle. And this year, this is unfair, I know, but it's the Isotta Fraschini. And I say that's unfair because I didn't expect them to be running at this point in the race. I thought they were going to die after a couple of hours in the race, but they are still running, and they are currently 14th overall, which is really impressive at their first ever Le Mans. And it's a great name to have in motorsport. I know it's probably got very little to do with the original Isotta Fraschini brand, but it's a good name to have in motorsport, isn't it? Actually, having said that, you know, Bicolis tried to do the same, didn't they? They tried to run as Vanwall, and that all went wrong legally. But at least Isotta Fraschini have got that brand. Who would you bring back, yeah? Who would you bring back to Le Mans? I know who I'd bring back. Lola. I know they're going into Formula E soon, where they're branding the car. Most of their technology will be bought, you know, the chassis bought from someone else, the drivetrain is from someone else in Formula E. But wouldn't it be lovely to have a Lola back at Le Mans? Lola made some great Le Mans cars over the years, and if you want to relaunch a brand, this is the way to do it. Bring it to Le Mans. Bring back Lola. I'm going to start a campaign. Bring back Lola. Okay, that's the new hashtag. Bring back Lola. You've got to say it in that slightly distant voice. What do you do? Bring back Lola. Hey there, sorry about the sudden soundscape change, but I'm recording this whilst I've been editing the programme, so this is back in Wales after our trip to Le Mans. And the reason why I'm doing this is that I realised that we didn't spend enough time talking about the vehicle that we were in whilst we were in it, so I thought I'd do it now. The vehicle that we were in is the Isuzu D-Max V-Cross, we said that, and it's a top-of-the-range luxury pickup. Now, I said luxury with a laugh in my voice, because when I spoke to Zog about whether he was able to come to Le Mans this year, I said, we're going in a luxury pickup. And Zog said those are two words which should not appear in the same breath, let alone sentence. Zog doesn't like pickups, but that's okay. It's good material between him and me. I really do. I believe in pickups. I think that they have an absolute purpose as a workhorse and as a lifestyle vehicle. Because apparently, I've got a lifestyle now. Well, by going to Le Mans camping, that's a lifestyle choice. So you've heard me say this on the programme before. Pickup is a great choice for that sort of thing. Just throw it all in the back. Easy to load. You'll get everything. We've taken a number of pickups to Le Mans in the past. We've taken the Nissan Navara. We've taken the Ford Ranger. I've driven the Hilux and I've driven the Amarok, but neither of those came to Le Mans with me. The real test is the Le Mans trip. Particularly for a lifestyle pickup. I hate saying that, but it's true. That's what this is. The V-Cross is effectively a pickup to sell to somebody who might otherwise be considering an SUV. Someone with a family, and perhaps a hobby, maybe you go karting or something. You want to throw your kart on the load deck. Well, it's about 4.5 foot long, I think, the load deck, if I remember. And it was a little on the small size for our needs, and I'll explain why. It's, you know, obviously going to have a shorter load deck because it's a double cab, not an extended cab, not a single cab. So there's bound to be a compromise. And also the vehicle that we tested had this, what they call, mountain roll top, retractable lid to the load bay. Now, you heard us mention that we were struggling to open and close that. I did, by the time we got back to North Wales, finally work out that I could actually do it myself, but I'm pretty sure it needed a bit of work. I don't think it was a user thing. It should have been easier to release that roll top than it was. Now, roll tops are great if you want to keep the stuff in your load bay completely dry and completely safe. You know, if you're carrying electronic equipment, like we were, you know, my recording equipment for this show, then that needs to stay dry. Or if you're carrying valuable tools, that needs to be locked in. A mountaintop is the answer. However, a mountaintop, which is a brand name for the roller deck top that's on this pickup, it does reduce your load space slightly because, like a roller door, it rolls away and uses up a little bit of space, some space, from the length at the upper side of the load base. You have to tuck things under it. Now, we really struggled to get everything we wanted to bring with us in the vehicle, but that is always the case. Here's the deal with camping. You always fill the vehicle to the absolute max, don't you? And so whatever vehicle you've got needs to be bigger. You know what I mean? So this is not a fault of the D-Max. However, if you want to go camping, I wouldn't go for the mountaintop. I'd get a Truckman top, a glass fibre box on the top of your load bay, and that effectively doubles the volume of your load bay. You could get bikes in there, you could get tents standing up rather than lying down. And we had a very, very big 5 metre canvas bell tent with us this year, which took up an awful lot of space, and all the kitchen equipment that we took with us that we didn't really need in the end. We did manage to get it in, but we would have got more stuff in if we'd realised there was actually some under-seat storage under the rear seats of the vehicle. Not huge, but enough to get, you know, a pair of walking boots in, some recording equipment, all that stuff, essential bits of food and beer. We would have filled those too, given half a chance. And while we were at Le Mans, Chris and I, who was very good at doing the pack, by the way, I've always considered with my history as a roadie that I'm reasonably good at making sure everything goes in a vehicle and how big a vehicle you need and how much space you've got and how much you can take. Right, but Chris was very good at forcibly squeezing things in. He was compiling things into smaller boxes, taking bits out, filling gaps with the bits he'd taken out of box. He was really optimising it. But on the way back, Chris and I were discussing whether we should try a different thing for the journey back. Rather than load everything in the load bay and put all the soft stuff, the sleeping bags and the backpacks and the pillows, in the rear cabin, which was very nice and very pleasant, but just a bit cramped, that we might get everything in the load bay if we didn't close the mountain top and we instead covered all the stuff in the load bay using a tarpaulin and a bunch of cable ties. We thought we'd give it a go first, and because we'd drunk and eaten many of our consumables at the campsite, then we didn't need to worry too much because we managed to gain a little bit of space and get all the stuff back in for the journey back. So if you've got loads of stuff, either get a Truckman top box or specify a vehicle with a bunch of hooks on the outside of the load bay. There weren't any on this version of the D-Max, the V-Cross version, but that would have been really handy, would have made tarpauling in over the box much easier. Of course, you don't need that if you've got the mountain roller deck thing. I was really impressed with the car. I genuinely was. We all were. Yes, it was a bit cramped in the back, but Here's why. Of the four of us, Raf is, what, 6'2"? Yeah. Chris is just shy of 6 foot. I'm not 6 foot. I'm 5'10 and a half. Phil's about the same height as me, 5'10 and a half, 5'11. We are big guys, big older guys. We need a bit of elbow room. And it was fine in the back and very, 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 very comfy in the front. Really great seats. Great air conditioning. In fact, air conditioning controls we didn't quite get on top of, but they certainly worked. It dished out loads of cold air, so much in fact that Phil complained that it was a bit cold in the back on occasions. The other reason why it was a bit cramped was that we were in this vehicle for 15 hours driving from North Wales to Le Mans. That's how long it took, and the journey back took even longer, 19 hours due to delays at Calais. And any vehicle short of a Maybach would start to feel a little cramped in the back on a journey of that distance. But if I was going to do a journey of that distance again in this pickup, I wouldn't balk at it. It's quite a sophisticated piece of kit. It's only got a 1.9 litre diesel engine that dishes out, I think, about 161 brake horsepower. So it's a little bit underpowered. It wasn't in any hurry to get up and go when you asked it to get up and go. In fact, the automatic gearbox, if you had it on cruise and you hit an incline, it would shuffle. It would drop down and change its mind again. It would shuffle between the top two of the six ratios available. But the benefit of that slightly underpowered quality is that this thing was really thrifty. We got 34 miles to the gallon on a 1,300 mile journey from North Wales to Le Mans and back. Quite the journey. And it was a little rattly at low revs, but when it gets up to cruise, it was really quiet. It was very smooth. And the wheels were specced. I'm not sure actually what they were, but these were not off-road tyres. These were road tyres. I know that because when we got to the campsite, I was reversing the pickup next to the tent, and it was a tiny, ever so slight incline, and it was dry, but it was slipping in rear-wheel drive. Admittedly, the vehicle was empty at that point, so I put it into one of the other two modes. You can either have high four-wheel drive or low four-wheel drive. I put it in low four-wheel drive, and it went up no trouble. The front wheels helped push it up backwards. It was an automatic, this vehicle, of course. That's why it was shuffling between the two ratios. But you can override that if you want. If you knock the gear stick to the right, you can switch up and down. There were no paddles, but you can change the ratios manually if you want. I love the way this thing looks. It's got a really technical quality to it. Absolutely sort of anthracite wheels and these black running boards, these steps that you can step into the cabin, which I think are pointless unless you've got children, in which case suddenly they make loads of sense. Anyone under the height of 4 foot, they would really benefit from that step up into the vehicle. For adults, you don't need it. The seats are at sit down height with a slight step up. I like the way it looks. It looks a bit like the Predator at the front. It's got these kind of slashes going on, this angular menace. And the brand Isuzu, and it is Isuzu, not Isuzu, by the way. I know that because I spoke to the people at Isuzu at the commercial vehicle show in Birmingham a couple of months ago, and they assured me it is Isuzu, not Isuzu. So what does Isuzu mean? Well, what does it come with? You know, every brand has a cachet. You know, the Ford Ranger says redneck. Forgive me, Ford, but it's true. The VW Amarok says, that's a Volkswagen, but it's a pickup. Are you American? The Nissan Navara says, Navara indeed, Vic. Yeah, it looks like it's just come off a building site, doesn't it? And Isuzu kind of suggests farmland to me. Farmers drive Isuzus very happily, the lower spec versions. But this is a very different car to that. And can Isuzu transcend that brand? And I think the V-Cross is the way to do it. It's a slick bit of kit. It's got everything. It's got level 2 driver assistance. It's got very good cruise control. It's got very good lane control. It's got a sound system that hooks up to your Apple CarPlay or your Android Auto, and it worked well for all of us. All three, well, three of the four people in the vehicle were driving, and we all hooked up our phones to it, and it was effortless to get it paired and sorted. It's a little gruff when you start going, the engine, but at motorway speeds it was really quiet. And it's got a good sound system, really good. Not necessarily very, very loud, but very, very clear. We were listening to Hyper Ballad by Björk on the way back, and as you know, that's my stock piece of music to listen to audio in cars, audio systems in cars, to work out how good they are, because that bass, the way that it starts, that boom, that's how Hyper Ballad starts. Listen to it now, you know what I mean? It sounded great in the vehicle. And the speakers are directly overhead in the ceiling, so they're not buried down by your feet. You're hearing it close to your ears, which gives it good definition. And Chris, who of course is a man who works in the music industry, has very good ears, was very complimentary of the sound system, and he knows what he's talking about. Sometimes I do too, not always. It's a proper off-road vehicle if you want it. It's got leaf rear suspension, it's got hill descent, it'll carry a payload of 1,000 kilograms in the back, and it's even got ISOFIX seat points, so if you wanted to put your little ones in the back, you can do that really easily as well. It's quite plush, it's got a leather steering wheel, it's got leather on the dashboard. Handy cup holders that fold away, they were really neat on the end of the dashboard either side. And my favourite bit was the glove box. It's got three glove boxes. There's a space in between the two front seats in the central armrest. There's a standard glove box which has got a DVD player in it, inexplicably. And then there was a glove box on the top of the dash with a flip-up cover in which we kept our passport safe the whole time. I kind of like that. Nice, handy, out of the way, doesn't reflect on the dash. Very good. It's not a driver's car. It's a pickup. It's meant to carry huge payloads. But in its defence, on the way back, that horrible 19-hour journey, we found ourselves on the A41. The M5 was closed, or the M6 at that point. And so I instructed Raf to go off down the A41. Not the easiest road in the world to drive. Narrow, two-lane, roundabouts every couple of hundred yards. And to be fair, Raf was making great but safe progress on that road. I thought he judged the roll of the vehicle, the acceleration and the braking really well. And the car on the tyres that we had, which I think were 18-inch... what were they? I made a note somewhere. Hang on, let's have a look. What were they? I took a picture of them so I could tell you. Let me find it. Hang on. Yeah, the tyres are 265/60R18/110H AT25s. So AT, I guess, means all terrain, but I would have said that these felt like road tyres, and very good road tyres. So despite its 0-60 time of just over 10 seconds, and it's, what should we say, modest 161 brake horsepower, this was a tremendous bit of kit. If you wanted to buy a new car, you could afford a new pickup, but probably not a new Discovery. You go for a second-hand one. So if you want to buy a new one, sensible money would go towards this car. It was very easy to live with. The whole experience with the car was a positive one, but tailor it to your needs. Do you need that mountaintop? Do you need an open load bay? Do you need a box? Have a serious think about how much stuff you're going to carry, because you can't put stuff on top of the load bay cover, right? That's the deal. Deep thanks to Isuzu for loaning us a £35,000 vehicle for a trip to Le Mans. It was exactly the right machine. We now return you to the right machines for racing at Le Mans. while we're talking about brands at Le Mans, I know that the ACO, well, encourage brands, or favour, that's the word I'm looking for, they favour brands that run in hypercar to run in GT3 as well. If you look at the GT3 cars, you've got Aston Martins, BMWs, Ford Mustang, Ferraris, McLarens, lots of Lamborghinis these days, Lexus of course, the Corvette, I guess Corvette. I'm sure be, yeah, I think that's everyone, isn't it? Yeah, those are all the brands. And the exceptions are Ford. Who was the other one? Hang on. Corvette. Now, Corvette are here because they're part of the larger GM group, so being regular winners in GT3, or what was GTE in the past, I'm sure that they're allowed to enter or favoured. But why are Ford here? Ford haven't run in the top class for a very, 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 should say that 50 times perhaps, long time. But they're here in GT3, perhaps because they won it in the past when they ran with the Ford GT a few years ago. Although, was that really a GTE car? It was a lot more like a proper LMP car, wasn't it, than a GT car in its day. I love that car. It's a shame it doesn't run, but of course Ford have no reason to run it anymore. They don't build the GT anymore. That's why they're pushing the Mustang. But there again, that's what GT3 does, right? It makes endurance racing a little more accessible, I suppose. You know, you don't have to have ultra developed cars. You can have a car that's good enough for national and international classes, but now super international class as well, the biggest one.
Gareth Jones on speed!
I'll just play spot the Cadillac.
Here's a bit of atmos of the sound on the start finish straight. exactly 24 minutes left to go of the 2024 Le Mans 24 Hours. All the 20s. And while we're on the 24, hang on a moment, where are we? I'm just looking down my list. Kiffin Simpson, or Cuffin, to give him his Welsh title, who's running it, a car with number 24, is currently 12th in GT3. Sorry, in LMP2. Oh. Hey, I wanted him to win, but it ain't going to happen. Still running. Leading the race at the moment, Nicholas Nielsen in the number 50 Ferrari AF Corse. In my opinion, the wrong Ferrari. Being chased by Jose Maria Lopez in the number 7 Toyota. And remember, Jose Maria Lopez didn't know he was going to be driving this car until about 2 weeks ago, when Mike Conway broke a collarbone, I think, in a bike accident. So Jose Maria Lopez was redrafted from the Lexus GT3 team into the hypercar team for Toyota, and he could well win this race. All depends on these last... How many laps do you reckon we're going to get in? Let me have a think. 24 minutes to go. You do the maths. I can't. I'm too tired. Stream past on their last laps. Leading at the moment, the wrong Ferrari, although being a Ferrari fan, I'm still happy it's a Ferrari win, but the number 50 AF Corse Ferrari of Miguel Molina, Antonio Fuoco, and Nicholas Nielsen are going to make it two wins in a row for Ferrari since their return to Le Mans. Epic. The stands, everyone on the bit down by the fencing, they're all standing up. The rest of us on the ACO stand watching eagerly as it's wet. There's still the possibility of things going wrong. You haven't won this race until you've crossed the line. The tension. In second place at the moment, Jose Maria Lopez in the number 7 Toyota. My Ferrari in third place, 43 seconds behind the leader. And the Penske Porsche, the number 8 Penske Porsche, running fourth, 44 seconds. And this is remarkable. We've got how many cars still on the lead lap? 9 cars still on the lead lap. It's not the closest ever finish, but they're all bunched up so close together that this has got to be some kind of record. So many cars on the lead lap. The clock has just turned 4 o'clock. So next time the cars cross the line, that's it. They go to 94 Peugeot. The Proton Mustang. The number 2 Cadillac making that great sound. The number 93 Peugeot is still running. The idling Lamborghini. Two LMP2 cars. Don't ask me which ones, I didn't see. Hello, consternation. What's happened? Hard to tell, but lots of people holding their heads in the Ferrari pit at the moment. What's happened? Everyone stands. Thank you. say, it's hard not to say this in the voice of John Eichel. Well, after 24 hours, Kyle Kahn's on the lead lap is an extraordinary achievement. I know it's not a very good John Hindorf, but best I can manage. Cameras, everyone's holding their cameras up. Everybody's pointing their cameras at the start of the straight here. And here he comes, crosses the line, lights flashing, and the number 50 AF Corse Ferrari with Nicholas Nielsen at the wheel wins the 2024 Le Mans 24 hours. Tears and relief in the AF Corse team garage. Such a great race by Toyota. Fair play to Toyota, who really pushed Ferrari. And Cadillac, where did they finish in the end? The seventh, Alex Palou. Sensational driver on, I think, his Le Mans debut. He'll be one to be back next year. Although, having said that, I believe that an IndyCar race has been scheduled to run on the same day as Le Mans next year, so I don't know if Palou will be back. But that's it from me from up here for now. I'm going down onto the pit lane to join in the celebrations. What a race! Enjoy it, ref.
Oh, of course, yeah, it's been amazing. It's been really nice to sit here for the last couple of hours, or a few hours actually, and just watching it all, taking it all in.
It takes 24 hours to learn who's in which car, doesn't it?
It might take a bit longer because I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, next year we'll get here a week early.
Yeah. Alright, fair enough. Yeah, we should do that. 24 weeks.
24 hours. Weeks, yes. Wonderful.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share, and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Gareth!